This morning we're going to continue, and this week, next week, finish out our study of the book of 1 Corinthians. If your Bible is open, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we're going to take the first 9 verses. I titled the lesson, The Grace of Giving, because that's kind of what Paul alludes to here, or teaches on, not alludes to it. I want to say at the very beginning, the very onset, about this lesson. What I say is not directed nor pointed at anyone, okay? I want you to understand that. I have no intent in my heart of that. There are a couple of things I'll mention because I'm going to mention them to give us a better awareness of what in the world we're doing. Too many times we're just following things because that's the way we've always followed them, and there's not an awareness of God of why we do it or why we don't do something. That's what we need to grow in, is our awareness of God. When we talk about the grace of giving, giving is something that saved people flourish in. You can't stop the saved from giving, because people that are saved, they see God as the source of everything that they have. They see God at the source of their salvation, and they see God at the source of their needs in their life as they go. And so everything is focused around that, and that's what we need to see. In 1 Corinthians 16, beginning in verse 1, we read, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also." Notice the collection. This collection was what? Who was it for? For the saints. Notice he doesn't say the collection of the saints. It was the collection for the saints. The collection that he's referring to here is a very specific collection. And he said here, "I directed the churches of Galatia, so also to you." So he's already taught the churches in Galatia about this. And now he's teaching the church at Corinth what he directed them. Well, if this is a collection for the saints, what saints are we talking about? Look at verse 3. He says, "When I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. And if it is fitting for me to go also, they will go with me." It's to carry their gift where? To Jerusalem. This collection was for the saints in Jerusalem. Paul also teaches the church at Rome. In Romans chapter 16, verse 25, he teaches them about this same collection for the saints in Jerusalem. And so Paul, coming to refer to this, he said that he's going to send this, carry this gift to Jerusalem. It's a gift. A gift is something done of free will. It's something given freely from the saints, for the saints. When were they to do this? Look at verse 2. "On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come." On the first day of every week. Now, you know what? You'll hear people sometimes want to argue, and they'll say, "Oh, you can't prove back there that they gathered together on the first day of the week." Well, right here, even concerning the collection for the saints in Jerusalem, it was to happen every first day of the week. That's when the brethren came together. That's when the church gathered, and we've already found out earlier in 1 Corinthians, that's when they gathered for the supper. That's when they gathered for their assemblies, was the first day of the week. And now Paul reminds them that this is going to be done on the first day of the week when they came together. And I want you to notice in verse 2, he says, "On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper. Quick point. Who determines your prosperity? There is nobody but you and the Lord. That's the only two people that determines prosperity, you and God. You and I have no right to determine the prosperity of another, but you know what? You know what Paul expected? He expected them to put aside and save as they prosper. Each one is to reflect of their prosperity for that week. Now, they're a little different than what we do because they were paid daily. As they worked, they would get, a lot of them would get a denarius a day that was unequal to a day's wage. Some would get more, some may get less. You know, but you know what? They sit down and they think of the prosperity and they've got to put something aside and save. Well, and they're bringing it together when? On the first day of the week when the church comes together. And why did Paul say this? He says at the end of verse 16, so that no collections be made when I come. Paul was coming to Corinth. He didn't have time to go from person to person, from house to house, to make a collection. So what they did, they brought their prosperities together. They gave it all together on the first day of the week. And that way when Paul came and arrived, he could pick it up and he could take this bountiful gift to the saints in Jerusalem. That's what they did in all of this. And then Paul continues. Look down at verse 5. He says, but I will come to you after I go through Macedonia, for I am going through Macedonia, and perhaps I will stay with you or even spend a winter so that you may send me on my way wherever I may go. For I do not wish to see you now, just in passing. For I hope to remain with you for some time, if the Lord permits. But I will remain in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective service for me has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. Paul made it clear, I'm coming. And I'm coming and I'm going to get this collection that you've made every first day of the week, and I'm taking it. But when I come, I don't want to stay. I want to stay. I don't want to just come passing through. I want to stay. But one thing I want you to note, he says that he wants to pass through Macedonia first. Macedonia is a region. It would be like what we would call a state today. It's north of Corinth. Paul is apparently over in Ephesus when he writes this book. And he wants to come to Corinth, but he's going to go up and he's going to pass through Corinth first. I said, it's east of Ephesus, or Corinth, excuse me. He's going to come up and he's going to go through the Macedonian region and come back down to the Corinthian brethren. That's what he wanted to do. I've got to go to Macedonia first. I want to pick that thought up. Come over, if you would, to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul, this is a year later. He has now gone through the regions of Macedonia, and he's writing back to the church at Ephesus about this grace of giving, about this collection that they were to do every first day of the week. And now he tells them in verse 1 of chapter 8, now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia. I want to tell you about God's grace. We're very weak on the grace of God. I would hope that you would take some time in your own home, and I wish you would do some reading and some studying about the grace of God. We attach the grace of God to salvation, and it is very true. We're saved by the grace of God. But you know what we don't realize? The grace of God is to work in every aspect of your life. Every aspect. I mean, just read Hebrews 4:16, where he talks about the grace of God for every need of yours. So you can receive grace to help in your time of needs. The grace of God is for everything. I remember a brother telling me one time, I'll throw this on the side, it's free. I remember he telling me he had a real hard time quitting smoking. And he said, I just don't know what else to do. I've tried all this. I said, have you tried the grace of God? What do you mean? The grace of God is the ability to go beyond what you can't do. Really? Yeah. Won't you try the grace of God? And you give it up and expect the grace of God to kick in. You know what he found? It worked. We don't see the grace of God working in our lives. We focus our lives, you know, that there's this external work that we do daily, and then there's the grace of God in dealing with salvation. Paul said, let me tell you about the grace of God that works among the Macedonian churches. And I want to share it with you. Look at verse 2. He says that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. The grace of God gave them the ability to give. That's what the grace of God does. He said, and if you'll notice their painful existence in verse 2, in a great deal of affliction, and look at the second part, and deep poverty. They had a very painful physical existence. But because of the grace of God, look what was happening inside of them, despite their existence, that in a great deal of affliction, their abundance of joy and the wealth of their liberality, they had joy. They were grateful that they were saved. And being grateful that they were saved, they wanted to share. They wanted to give. They wanted to help. They looked to God for that. They didn't look to themselves. If they looked at themselves, what would they see? A painful existence. But they looked to God. And that God surpassed everything that they saw on the face of this earth. It didn't matter how poor they were. It didn't matter how much the pain that they had in their poverty, their affliction. What mattered is they had a relationship with God. And that's what came forth in this deal. That's what they had. And so what was the result of their joy? Look at verse 3. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. You know what? It is the grace of God that takes us beyond what we're able to do on our own. That's where we seem to miss it today. That's why we seem to can't overcome things. That's why we have difficulty in going forward in things, is because we don't understand the grace of God actively involved in our lives. And here it is. What would be your ability in deep poverty and great affliction? But what would be your ability in deep poverty and great affliction with the grace of God? They gave beyond their ability because of God's grace. You know, I can't imagine whatever it is they're giving. I can't imagine to be sitting here with this little bitty piddly amount that I have left to exist on for this next week. And I'm going to trust God's grace to take me beyond because I want to be a giver to God. And you let that go. That would take faith. That would take trust. That's what we seem to miss. And Paul said, let me tell you about this. I testify to it. That according to their ability, no, beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. They gave of their accord. I didn't tell them to do it. Look at verse 4. Begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this not as we had expected. They begged. How many of us beg to help our brothers and sisters? I mean, here the churches were in Macedonia. They were in deep poverty. What kind of poverty were the saints in Jerusalem in? I don't know if they were in deep poverty, but whatever it was, the grace of God kicked into the Macedonians. They were grateful for salvation. They were grateful for their lives, and they begged Paul, the apostles, and they said, let us have favor and participate in the support of the saints. Boy, that doesn't sound like our deal today, does it? You know what we do? We spend way too much time looking at what we lack. I don't have this. I don't have that. I can't do this. You know what we never look at? Grace of God. By the grace of God, you can. Because the grace of God is powerful. The grace of God is for us. If we would just put some faith in God and who He is. Well, what's the result of that? Verse 5. And this, not as we had expected. How did they do it? But they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. You know how they were to give by the grace of God? They first gave themselves to the Lord. They had a committed trust to the Lord. First. These were people committed to God. First. And then they gave themselves to the apostles. Let us help. Please let us have the favor to participate in that. But I want to tell you, that's where it starts. Giving yourself to the Lord first so the grace of God can help in whatever needs there need to be after that. First, they gave themselves. You see, the grace of God, God gave me Jesus when I didn't deserve Him. Jesus didn't send my sins. I sinned my sins. And God's grace said, here's the gift. The grace of God says, now I will take you, my people, into assurances that you don't deserve. But because of my gift, I will meet your every need and give you the ability to go beyond what you're able. That's the grace of God. But it has to be given a whole heart, a whole life committed to the Lord first. Well, let's take it a step further. Come over to chapter 9 of 2 Corinthians. And I want to take this step, this principle of the grace of giving a little further. Look at verse 6 of chapter 9. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. The principle of reaping and sowing from God. Whatever you sow, that you will reap. Now here's where the difficulty comes in talking about giving. Most of the time when people teach about giving, and this hasn't happened here, I am so grateful. But I have been around long enough, I've been in enough places to know when people start talking about giving, they start beating brethren over the head and they start trying to make people feel guilty, and they'll use this verse right here, "You sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly." I want to use this for greed. I want to use this for coveting. I want to use this for everything other than what God intended it to be. This is what God says. I just want you to know, saints, if you sow sparingly, you're going to reap from the Lord very sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you'll reap from the Lord bountifully. What do you mean by that, Lord? What are you saying? Look at verse 7. Each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart. I want to stop right there. Don't raise your hand. How many of you, before we assemble, each first day of the week, sit down and purpose in their heart about your giving? Oh. Well, a lot of times we don't think about it. We open up the purse, we open up the wallet, and when we're sitting there saying, "Oh yeah, I got to find some." You know what he says? Each one must do as he has purposed. It has to be purposed. Giving is with the grace of God intended. Giving is focusing on God and God alone. You look to grace of God and you look to your prosperity and you make a purpose with that. That's what it's for. But too many times we're not purposing. You see, so we're leaving God out of what we're doing. Sometimes it makes me wonder, are we even aware of why we're here? Oh, this is another church service. Is that really what this is? If you notice, I've always, for the years, I've avoided coming to church. I've avoided that phrase intentionally. This is free. I want you to understand we're here to assemble in worship to God. My giving, it needs to be purposed. And that's why Paul, he uses this, that each one must do just as he is purposed in his heart. There has to be a purposed response here. Hold this for a second. We'll come right back. Come over to Hebrews 13. Hebrews chapter 13. And I want to show you one verse, and I want to show you the principle. Hebrews chapter 13. Look at verse 16 for me. And he says, "And do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." Do not neglect. Do what is good, what benefits others. Do what benefit, doing good, that's what it is, and sharing. Doing good, beneficial things for other people, and sharing. Notice what he calls them at the end of verse 16. He says, "For such sacrifices, God is pleased." What is a sacrifice? A sacrifice is something that is presented as an offering. Isn't that what a sacrifice is? I'm presenting this as an offering to God. And if I'm a person that does things that are beneficial to other people, if I'm a person that shares with my prosperity other people, what is that? I do it, why? to do good things? No, it's a pleasing sacrifice to God. I'm presenting it before God. God, I want you to accept this sacrifice from my hands. It is purposeful. Now, here you go. Let me back it up just a step. Let's go back under the Old Testament law. Now, you know what they had to do back there? They had to bring an animal sacrifice, didn't they? And they would have to bring an animal sacrifice for their sins or an animal sacrifice for their burnt offering to express to God that all that they have, they recognize is from you. That's what the burnt offering is for. What if you were coming to bring your animal that day, and let's say it's just for a sin offering, just to make it simple, and you come up there to the altar of burnt offering, and the priest meets you there, and here you go, you begin to say, okay, what are you here for? Well, I guess a sin. Okay, what's it? I guess I said something really bad. All right, well, here's animal. Well, I guess this is my offering here. Okay, hey, can you kill it for me? What if you came to the altar with that kind of an attitude of a sacrifice? You think God would receive that from your hands? Well, I'm supposed to give something. Here it is. Best. Well, that animal's blemished. Well, that's all I've got. Really? God did not tolerate that from the nation. He wanted people to have a purpose, something purposed in their heart when they came and they brought that sacrifice. When you and I do good and share, God is pleased when you have the right attitude behind those sacrifices. You know what these gifts, you know what this giving was that the churches of Macedonia had done by the grace of God? You know what the churches, or the region, the churches in Achaia, the churches of Galatia, you know what Paul's talked about to the church at Corinth? This is your offering. It's a sacrifice. And each of you need to do it as you purposed. Giving by the grace of God is a sacrifice. Now, I'm not meaning to be harmful here. This is where I want our men to really listen to it. How many times when we get to our offering, do we hear the comments like, we live in a great nation, and it's wealthy, and we've been blessed beyond. God's not concerned with the nation you live in. Yes, it's a great nation, but that does not encourage me in the art nor the love and the faith of what it means to give by the grace of God. If we're going to use that as the standard, then empty your bank accounts, folks. All of it compared to other nations. But you see, sometimes when we say things, we take away the grace of God of giving because we make it something physical. We make it something about where we live versus me purposing in my heart toward the grace of God, offering a sacrifice. I'm presenting this before you, my God. Or what about this? This is the time the elders have set aside to help with the work of the church. Where do you find that? Paul said, I want to make known to you the grace of God to the churches of Macedonia. The grace of God. Learning to do good, to share our sacrifices. And it's pleasing to God when it's done with purpose. You and I come together on the first day of the week and we bring a sacrifice of our lips. which is Hebrews 5 or Hebrews 13, 15 tells us. And we also bring a sacrifice of sharing. And it's not about a convenient time. It's an offering. An offering to God. Brethren, maybe that's why the grace of God is so little at work in our lives. Because we don't recognize the grace of God at work in our lives, and therefore everything is on such a low level. Well, it's come to the time that we do this. It's come to the time. Our offering is a purposed offering. It is an offering that the Lord looks at from each one of us, and He's saying, why are you doing this? Why are you giving this? Why are you not giving? I mean, that's what He's looking at. Come back to 2 Corinthians 9, and let's finish this up real quick. Look at verse 7 again. He says, each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion. Don't do it grudgingly. You know, a person that gives grudgingly, that's a person that, man, I've got to give. Oh, I've got to have something to give. I mean, they're stressed about it. I don't want you to be that away, Lord said, or under compulsion. Hey, if you love the Lord, you'll give. Oh, guess what? Well, I guess I love the Lord. Then let's see it. Let's give some money. You cannot compel people to give. Preaching on giving should not make people feel guilty if they do or if they don't. That's not what God's looking for. He says, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver, an attitude of the heart. What were the Macedonians? They gave cheerfully. And you know what they received? Grace of God. Because it was purposed in the heart. It was purposed all the way down there. In fact, you know where this thing leads? Look down at verse 12 real quick. He said, for the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints. It's not just for supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God. Guess what the giving was for? Many thanksgivings to God. That's what was behind it, but that's not all. Look at verse 13. Because the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ, and for the liberality of your contribution to them all. Glorify God because you confessed the gospel of Jesus. It means everything to you. And the liberality of your contribution, that sacrifice, guess what? It meant something to them all, and guess what they'll do? They glorified God. Isn't that what giving is all about? Making sure God's glorified? Now let me ask you again. How many of you purposely set out this morning and each first day of the week thinking about your sacrifice? I would encourage you from today, if you haven't done that, I would encourage you from today, you need to think about it. You need to look at your purpose. Now see, sometimes people can, like I told you, covetousness, greediness can get in here and people can say, hey, you know what, he's trying to drum up more money. Absolutely not. This is for your benefit. You sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. You sow bountifully, you'll reap bountifully. But you need a purpose in your heart as giving some glory to God and overflowing with some thankfulness to God, and let it be a sacrifice to God. Why? Verse 8, we're going to close with this. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. God is able. God is able God is able to make all grace abound to you. What does that mean? That you will always have sufficiency to go beyond what you're able. There's the grace of God at work, that you can have sufficiency in everything. You know, sometimes you don't even know where you're going to pay your bills at. And the grace of God comes to work, and you find out, where did I get that? There needs to be some thanks and some gratitude. I made it. And how did I make it? By the grace of God. And now whenever you see things and you want to help with things and you want to share with people, let it be knowing that the grace of God will be there for all sufficiency for what needs to be done. You know what? I thought about this. Maybe the people over in Nigeria have it right. Maybe they've got it right. I know when we were there and they came to their sacrifice, and that's what they called it. Nigerian people are very poor. They had nothing. And they had this cloth bag that they just handed among the people, and people would put whatever means were in that cloth bag. They didn't pray before it. We've kind of made that a custom. I don't find a scripture where they prayed before their offering. There's nothing wrong with it, believe me. But the Nigerians didn't pray before it. And they had the people make their sacrifice, and after the sacrifices were made, they brought the sacrifice to a gentleman up front, and the gentleman took the sacrifices and he put it down out on the table. And then the congregation as a whole, they prayed over the sacrifices. And I thought, that's something I've never seen. But you know what? Isn't that what it's about, is giving thanks? Poor people that had nothing, and yet here they were making a sacrifice to God, and you wonder, how in the world did they ever make it? Well, they were grateful because they understood a little deeper than I did the grace of giving. And I thought, that's what it was about. Now, I don't have to mimic them. We don't have to do that. And I'm not calling us to do that. But the attitude behind it was there. And I saw it. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then I look at the attitude we have today. We're robbing our people from making a sacrifice that pleases God. It's not an amount. It's a sacrifice. It's an offering presented. We as God's people, for the gracious work of God that we help in. And that's all it's for. And I hope you'll take that with you. If there's something that I've missed, if there's something that you think I've overspoken, I hope you'll share it with me. I sure won't get upset at you, because I'm growing in this grace too. But I'm telling you, when you think about it and you go through and you read what they did, I want you to go back and read 2 Corinthians 8, the whole chapter, right into 9. And you'll see he's talking about this same collection that they did on the first day of every week. And I want our young people to learn how to be gracious in the great giving of the grace of God and sacrificing. I want our young families to learn that. I want our older ones to learn that. It is a sacrifice to God, and that is its purpose. And let's rally around that.